Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure, and this is Palace Intrigue. Jason, on tonight's episode, or tomorrow's, or the next day's, depending on when you're listening to it, we will talk about the Bears' utterly bizarre 29-22 loss to the Vikings on Sunday. We'll analyze what Justin Fields did better and did worse. And we'll talk about what Matt Eberflus did to try to pull out the come-from-behind victory. All of that and more coming up on Palace Intrigue. Jason, you and I are sitting here in the U.S. Bank Stadium press box. By the way, a lovely press box, a lovely stadium, and something to which the Bears should aspire. And trying to figure out what the heck to make out of this 29-22 loss to the Bears, or to the Vikings. The Bears were down 21-3, and then up, 22-21? And gave up a touchdown in the last couple of minutes of the game. It's the only second-half touchdown they've given up all year, by the way. Is this progress? Do we know?
Well, hard to say, Patrick. I think that one of the things that happened today, and it is a bizarre game, when you go from down 21-3 to up by one in the fourth quarter, and then where this fell apart for them is where I think the biggest problem lies. At the end of the game, their defense broke at the wrong time in an otherwise good second half, but you know every part of it counts. And Justin Fields ends the offense's bid ends with Justin Fields throwing to a wide receiver named Amir Smith-Marset, whom the Bears claimed off waivers from the Vikings in their effort to find cheap and available wide receivers, and he gets stripped and they lose the game. And so you see various other issues too. You see offensive line problems. Hey, we're used to that, right? You see all these problems, and Justin Fields, all these problems around Justin Fields, and what is maybe the best game of his career sinks meaninglessly into that ocean of deficiencies.
I think the Monday night game was better against the Steelers last year, but you could argue, and I think we talked about this a little bit ago, the second half tonight was the best we've seen him play this season for sure. And he had the opportunity that I think Bears fans are curious about and that we are curious about, which is what happens when it's up to him to go win them the game. And he had the opportunity to do that, gets the ball with about 2 minutes left. The operation isn't – I mean, the Bears said they were happy with the operation, but there was a sack there. A couple of the big gains he got were little flips to David Montgomery, and David Montgomery did all the work. But at the end of the day, Amir Smith-Marset – has got the ball at the 39 going in and has an opportunity on the left-hand sideline to step out of bounds. He doesn't. He tries to cut it up, thinking that the safety had overplayed him a little bit. And the safety literally just yanks the ball out of his hands. That is something that is unacceptable, whether you are a waiver wire acquisition at the start of the season or a 10-year starter. And it really robbed us of an opportunity to see what Justin could do.
And that's a real big problem because you need to see what he can do. And this would have been the perfect opportunity to evaluate him in just tonight. You couldn't have drawn up a better situation, Pet.
Right.
Let's see Justin Fields, 2 minute drill, down seven, one timeout against a decent team. Like, this is a great time to find out what you've got in Justin Fields. And if Amir Smith-Marset, let's just say if he doesn't get stripped, they're at the 39. They probably burn a timeout in that case, and they've got over a minute left. If he just steps out of bounds, you're talking about them being at the 42-yard line, at the Minnesota 42, with a minute seven and a timeout that is plenty with which to work.
Yep.
And you are robbed of seeing what Justin Fields would do in that situation. Maybe he makes a play you never forget. Maybe he makes an incredible play to win the game, and you say, maybe this is it. Maybe the Bears, in their infinite ways to lose, come up with some other debacle. But you just have to imagine it,
because right.
It doesn't exist.
Maybe
what exists is Cam Dantzler running the other way with the ball and the game's over.
Yeah, maybe they score and maybe they go for two. And maybe they win the game. Yeah, you don't know. But the issue is that the Bears have surrounded Fields with a lot of players who on most teams wouldn't and shouldn't be playing.
Smith-Marset wouldn't be playing on the Vikings.
Yeah, because they cut him. And we've talked all season about how they are hampering his development. The Bears are for a whole lot of reasons, some of them play calling, some of them, you know, personnel. I think you and I both come down on the fact that the personnel deficiency is worse than the play calling deficiency for sure. And now we saw very plainly what happens when you trust a guy like that.
Yeah, you saw issues with the offensive line too. I mean, there was a play where Sam Mustipher snapped the ball into Justin Fields' gut. I think they were at their own 14. That's a drive ender for the Bears. First down, you snap, you end up at 2nd and 11 from the 13. Like, they're not climbing out of that, and of course they didn't climb out of that. I don't think that this offensive line is working, although Justin Fields navigated pressure pretty well today. He had pretty good sense in the pocket. He had pretty good patience. He said he felt like he kind of slowed down and played the way he wanted to play. But I don't know where any of the solutions to this are. I mean, the solutions are to go back in time and do a better job if you're Ryan Poles in the offseason, which I think all of us were saying that he needed to.
Right.
This is not a playing the result situation. Mm-hmm. This is, we knew that they had to strip it down a little bit and they had to cut costs and they need to prioritize their opportunity for 2023 in free agency right. and in the draft. But not going so far in that effort that you don't give Justin Fields enough to work with in 2022, because there's nothing more important, Pat.
Nope.
Either him developing or him at least getting a legitimate chance to develop, and then you can see, okay, he's not it.
Justin Fields' numbers today, 15 for 21 for 208 passing yards. He had his first passing touchdown since week one. It was a pop pass on a sweep. It was essentially a handoff, but it'll count. He had a passer rating of 118.8, and that should get him out of the basement among the NFL's starters. He only took 2 sacks, which, given the way he'd been getting hit lately, is an accomplishment. All in all, a pretty professional stat line for him.
It's his first time over 100, I believe, in passer rating.
Yeah, and just the context of this game, and Mark Potash is here and will join us shortly with his game balls, but you know, the context of this game, Jason, where you know we've said all season, or I've said all season, that this is a team that can't play chase. This is a team that can't scramble to try to make up points.
A team that can't be down 21-3 in the blink of an eye.
And they were, and then they managed to crawl back in and take a lead, you know. And some of it was because Matt Eberflus decided to be aggressive. Some of it was because he decided to be aggressive and failed. And they scored kind of, you know, despite themselves. There was a touchdown at the end of the first half that was preceded by Darnell Mooney's ridiculous one-handed catch for 39 yards. And then the Bears come back in the first drive of the second half and score there, go for 2 and miss it. And then Eberflus calls an onside kick. Yeah, I had just written about this, Jason, but you know they'd scored 1 touchdown in the previous 8 quarters before the second quarter on Sunday. Now they score on back-to-back drives, and he decides that he wants to try and pull a fast one and get the ball back. I'm good with it because, you know, in the back of my mind was still how much the Vikings had just run roughshod over exactly. the Bears. But that's the side of the head coach I hadn't seen before, kind of a little bit of an aggression out of him. This is a guy whose entire defensive ethos is don't take chances, don't take chances, don't take chances. And he did. And even though it didn't pay off, I think it taught us something about him.
And it made perfect sense to me, like you were saying, about the way the game was going at that point. There was a lot of logic behind right. taking that risk.
Right. Potsy, do you have the game balls?
Sure do.
Can you put your bag down first before you come in? Your bag full of game balls?
Yeah. Sure
as a quick reminder, Mark Potash assigns a game ball to someone on offense, defense, and special teams. He should have no shortage of candidates today. And as he puts down his hefty sack of game balls, he is now reaching into, what is this, burlap? He's reaching in to pull one out to symbolically hold it in the air while he awards the offensive game ball to...
For the record, they're not actual game balls. They're just...
I'm looking at them right now.
It's an award.
It's a theater of the mind. Yeah. Oh, okay. Sit down.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Yeah, no, they're pretty easy today, I guess, for a Bears game that I feel like was, you know, I think in the big picture, a step forward for this team. I guess I'll get right into it. Offensively, Darnell Mooney, that catch was just, yeah, I mean... I give credit to Justin Fields. This was an important game for him, and maybe the most important development was just that he wasn't going backwards.
Okay,
and that was good. But I have to say that catch by Darnell Mooney, not only was it a fabulous catch, but I feel like it changed the momentum of the game. I think it gave people hope. I think it had an effect on both teams, and you saw a pretty pretty significant turn in the way this game went off of that fantastic catch. I mean, that was Odell Beckham Jr., right? Isn't that his forte? So he's clearly the gets the offensive game ball. Defense.
Whoa. So slow down. This is our excuse to analyze what you say and talk further about the game.
Yeah.
I talked to Mooney in the locker room. Mooney said that before the series started, he went up to Justin and he said, "Listen, man, we got to do something. You either got to take off and run, or we need to give the team a spark." And he comes out in the first play of the drive, he heaves it deep, and Mooney just makes that play. You know, to go from 21-3 to 21-10 was pretty important. But just it feels like every time this team starts a game, you know, that first drive is usually pretty good, and then they hit the doldrums right away,
right.
And it's usually because they can't do anything through the air. This kind of solved both problems in one play.
It did, and like I said, it had a huge impact, I think, all over the game. But you know, this is a minor point. It's never a bad thing to have your guy on all the national highlights. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be a play that is going to get national attention. I think that's just a good thing for the Bears. I think it's a good thing for Darnell Mooney. I think that'll help him because you know he had kind of a rough start. I just think overall, for one play, normally in a loss, especially you're not going to give too much emphasis on one play. But I just thought that was just a fabulous play by him. And you know, like you said, it had an important thing. It gave them something that they hadn't been. It gave them a consistency in scoring that they hadn't had. I don't know if that's a breakthrough. Maybe it'll change next week. Who knows? But I think it was still that was one of the positives. One of the not subtle positives, but just one of the positives about a loss that sometimes gets kissed off, and I don't think should be.
And then, to paraphrase Bill Veeck, fun is good, and nobody has accused the Bears of being fun this season. So something like that pops up is never a bad thing. What do you got on defense, Posse?
On defense, I'm going with a play that I think was obviously big in the game, but also big for a particular player, Kendall Vildor's interception, which I guess I don't know the particular. I mean, I did talk to him, so it looked like he – It looked like he just made a good read and just, you know, it was a good play by him as far as having a little bit of an idea of what was going to happen and reading the quarterback. And it was not just one of those interceptions where, hey, I just happened to be in the right spot at the right time. He actually played for that interception, got it. At that point in the game, that's where you thought, hey, they've done more than just been resilient. You know, they've done more than just stayed in this game. They could actually win it. And sure enough, they had a golden opportunity to do it. And I thought, good play by a player who really needed it because that secondary, I don't know if you can say got torched by Justin Jefferson because there weren't any really, really huge, you know, big, you know, long plays or whatever. But, boy, that their approach to stopping or, I guess, containing Justin Jefferson, I don't think worked very well at all.
No, it didn't. And with Jalen Johnson missing today's game with the quad injury he suffered in practice 2.5 weeks ago, that Bears defensive backfield, particularly at corner, is not very good right now. You wonder whether Jalen will have a chance to play Thursday. I think the upshot of him not playing today is that you might get a rested and ready Jalen Johnson at a time when the Commanders and the Bears aren't going to be. So we'll keep an eye on that this week, Potsy. Oh, Jason, what's up?
Well, Eddie Jackson actually said when he was talking about Jalen Johnson's absence today and how problematic it was and how problematic it always would be for them because he's by far their best corner. He said, Patrick, very matter-of-factly that Jalen Johnson is going to be back on Thursday.
It seemed that way because I was wrong as it turned out, but he looked about as prepared to play for as a doubtful player has. It's been since 2020 that a player is listed as doubtful has actually played in the game. It was Allen Robinson when he had a concussion, but generally that's out. That means out. I think we've all learned that. And this, I could just tell by the way he was talking and that he was talking on Friday. I think it was that he was pretty a lot closer than doubtful. And you could also tell just like you saw from. I think it was Velas when he the week before he played. You could tell that he just physically looked good, even in the warm-ups. I mean, he didn't do a whole lot, but he was doing more than normal. So he definitely looks ready and probably needed him more today than they will on Thursday, as it turns out. But, you know, timing is everything.
Thursday might be a more winnable game, though. And who do you have on special teams?
Special teams got to go with, you know, the Bears are just an unbelievable place-kicking role. You know, anybody they throw in there now irony of ironies, just gets the job done. You can't ignore it. First, I will say, Dominique Robinson had a block. As it turns out, it was his block, and that was important, too. But Cairo Santos, I mean, those aren't chip shot field goals he's making the last 2 weeks, right? I mean, I think he had, 51 today? And
50, 51, and 43?
Yeah. They were pretty important. Obviously, one gave him a lead. Just, I think, for this team, having a dependable kicker is huge. And I have to admit, in the back of my mind, I'm bracing for him to hit some kind of slump when they need it the most, you know, the Bears. Right. That's how it works. But right now, he's going great. He's very dependable. And he's obviously, I think, pretty deserving for the game ball on special teams.
And we do forget, because he came back on Monday, that, you know, he did miss last week with the personal issue. I talked to him about just kind of, you know, him spending a couple of days away from kicking, about how he needed to get back in his daily rhythm and all of that. He certainly seems like he's done that. You know, they had that onside kick. Looked pretty good to me, but Matt Adams was just a split second late falling on it.
Yes, that is true.
That'll do it for Game Balls. Thank you, Mark Potash. Jason, I want you to jump in here real quick before we go. The Bears are in an unusual position here where they're going to play again on Thursday and then not again until the following Monday. This is as close to a bye as they're going to have until their actual bye, which is second week of December, something like that, the latest bye of the season. What do you think the next couple of days are going to be like for them as they try to turn around and get ready for Washington? And is the break going to be helpful, or are they still so young that rest isn't a giant deal?
The break is what I'm really interested in, Pat. I think the next few days, what you're going to see, they're playing Washington at home. That helps. Washington's terrible. They're 1-4. They have Carson Wentz at quarterback. I think that you probably, as a lot of teams have to in this case, going Sunday to Thursday, you can't change anything, really. You don't really have the luxury of making big changes. But it's that break after that, where I think they have 11 days or so between the Washington game and the game at New England. If you want to tinker with your offensive line, for example, that's the time to do it. And I just don't think this offensive line is working. They obviously are, in theory, playing their best guys, so the guys behind them are not going to be upgrades, but it's time to reevaluate all options. Alex Leatherwood, I believe, would be back in play. I think he could be back in play now, couldn't he? But
Monday.
Probably not going to do that for the Washington game, but you need to really rethink the offensive line, and that break between Washington and New England is the time to do it.
Yeah, and it seems like the opportunity would be to move Lucas Patrick over from left guard to center and try and find somebody to plug in at left guard there. And maybe that's Leatherwood. I think he might, you know, that's where the Raiders decided he was best, was at a guard position. But, you know, again, if he's had mono for a month, you know, I don't know that you can bring him back on a Monday and play him on a Thursday.
But again, it's the first time this line's played together. They have no experience. I think, personally, I think it's too early to panic on that. And I think, you know, I think what they need most is experience, because on this roster, they're not going to get that much better. What they're basically looking for, not that won't happen, what Jason is saying, is that you can throw other guys in there, but you're basically looking for some kind of magic that you find, some kind of magic chemistry you find among less than stellar players. And I don't know I think they're agreeable to doing that, but much more in the training camp situation than in the regular season. I don't think they're ready to give up on this one right now. I think they're going to stick with it, and they might jumble some things around, but I think they still need to play together more, but to really see what you've got, I just think it's a little bit early to make too many changes. Unless you have tackle issues, right?
I mean, right. Well,
and do they? I mean, that's, you know.
I think their tackles have been okay.
Yeah.
Not great, but okay. And before we get out of here, I just want to, and Posse, Jason and I talked about this a little bit, but Justin Jefferson, 12 of 13 for 154 yards. Kirk Cousins completed the first 17 balls. He threw 32 for 41 for 296. Dalvin Cook, 18 for 94, average 5.2 yards a carry. This is a professional offense, unlike one that Bears had seen, maybe with the exception of the Packers, coming into today. I'm not sure they're going to see another one in the next couple of weeks, because Washington's not very good. And the Patriots, you know, no offense to Bailey Zappi and their, you know, 40-point beatdown of the Lions, I don't know that the Patriots offer a a variety of ways to beat you the way that the Vikings do. Was this our reminder, at least the first half, that the Bears' defense is going to be outclassed by some offenses this season?
Yeah, I think so. I think this was a little bit of a litmus test and kind of a barometer, I guess. Because, like you said, this is, you know, people look at, like, Kirk Cousins as, like, you know, a guy who's shy of being the elite level or not up to snuff. But on the level the Bears are at, as you saw today, even when he was great at the beginning, the Bears got the better of him in the second half. But when it came to it, he was better than average and won the game. So I think it was a big test for the Bears. I don't think their defense is maybe as good as I thought it was going to be. Certainly not at this stage. It's not. I thought it'd be better. And I'm just basing it on what Eberflus' defense did in Indy with similar talent. But yeah, I think you're right. But I think the best thing for them at this point, normally I don't say this, is to play some teams they can handle just so they can kind of get their feet on the ground a little bit.
Yeah, when they needed the defense the most, they gave up on the final drive or the final meaningful drive before kneel downs. The Bears gave up first downs on 3rd and 1, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 8, 3rd and goal at the 1.
And even worse was they had 1st and 15, they had 2nd and 14, they had like 3rd and 8, I can't remember what. They gave up, it was like they had this cushion that they were just asking for trouble. It's like they were afraid of the big play. When the Vikings weren't in need of a big play, they had 9 minutes left. I didn't quite get that strategy because, like I mentioned in my story, and we've talked about it, is that was a weird game-winning drive from a defensive standpoint, and that there were no major lapses. There were no obvious, overt, you know, misplays or whatever. And they just, a good offense, just kind of tactically and efficiently, just nickel and dimed them. And that made the difference in the game. But, you know, that it was interesting for the Bears because fourth quarter, that's second half, that's been their strength, second half defense. And when it came down to it, in a moment of extreme decision, as they say, they failed.
Jason used to laugh at me. I think, was it last year or the year before that we talked about the Bears defense? And my declaration was that they didn't feel dangerous to me. They were just good. This defense to me is absolutely not dangerous. One sack, 3 quarterback hurries right. all day. Their strength is playing a soft shell and daring you to, you know, complete 17 straight in a row, which Kirk Cousins obliged. But Jason, is there anything they can do to fix this up? Or I mean, we're looking at Robert Quinn and, you know, Al-Khadi Muhammad. I mean, these pass rushers that they're relying on, Travis Gibson, these aren't rookies. These are guys who shouldn't need time to adjust to this new system. These are guys who should be, you know, getting off the bus ready to rush the passer, right?
Yeah, I think I agree with Mark. I thought things were going better defensively than they have now proven to have gone. And when you look at where they can improve, it would be there is some cause to believe that they could improve internally on defense. You expect at some point Kyler Gordon to play a lot better. Mm-hmm. Dominique Robinson, maybe. Maybe they found something there in a late 5th-round pick that he develops into more of a starting pass rusher by mid to 3/4 season. I don't know. And Roquan Smith, maybe we see some improvement from him as he continues to acclimate to the new scheme. I do think their defense has been surprisingly problematic, but there's more personnel-wise, there's more cause for optimism that things could turn around with what they have than there is on offense.
Well, and also, Potsy, that's what these guys do well, right? Matt Eberflus has a head coaching job because he knows how to turn a roster of middling defensive players into a good defense. You'd think that just naturally that would be more likely to happen here than, say, the offense making a big leap.
And we've seen from a outside of personnel, which, you know, you can only deal with what you have, this coaching staff has actually been pretty effective, I think, in building a team. I mean, they've tried to instill this mental and this physical and mental toughness, this mental toughness that will make them resilient in games. And they have shown that on defense, even when they're not good. Mm-hmm. They've always been better in the second half. They've outlasted teams, and you know, they came up short this time. But if they can, if they can do that, then I think there's hope that that they will improve also as the season goes on. You know, I just think the one thing we know about this team is that the ceiling is low.
Right.
Their ceiling is low, and they're only going to get so good. But I still say, and I know it probably gets tired to hear it's early. But the first year of a program, I don't know, I'm not making any judgments until at least the halfway point. So I'll give them that to show improvement. And we'll see what happens. But, today, yeah. I guess my point is they have consistently shown that something Eberflus wants to do, it wants his teams to be, regardless of talent, is no matter how good or bad they are, he wants them to be better at the end of games and at the beginning, and they are. Now they just got to find a way to get better at the beginning of games.
Right. And as a wise man once said, never underestimate the mediocrity of the NFL.
Yes.
The fact that the Bears have a very live chance to be 3-3 through six games tells you all you need to know about the teams they're playing more so than them.
A chance to win a game that a lot of teams would have gotten blown out like 45-10
right.
by a better team than the Vikings or a team that's less prone to turning mediocre in an instant like the Vikings. Nothing against the Vikings.
With all due respect to the Vikings, that'll do it from here. As always, check out the Sun-Times online or pick up a newspaper. As you may have read, we no longer have a paywall, which is very good news for you guys, the reader. Please consider donating if you would like as well. You can follow Jason, Mark, and I on Twitter. You can't donate to us through there, but maybe, if you want to, you can find a way. no, Potsy?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Personally, you're talking about?
Yeah. Just
Venmo?
We'll put our Cash App up there.
I don't think that's going to fly. that would be an interesting thing. You donate to the sports writer, to the writer you want, that you like. Oh, man. What a competition that would be.
We'll pitch that to the bosses. Until then, you can follow us on Twitter. And as always, like, rate, and review the podcast. Until Thursday, he is Jason Leisure. I'm Patrick Finley. He's Mark Potash. Thanks so much for listening.